It's the first day of the new legislative session here in Iowa, and a new session means new bills, new passions, and maybe some old issues too, as many critics thought not a lot got done last year. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. The drawn-out and divided election is months behind us now, but Iowa's House and Senate are still divided. What will this mean for Governor Branstad's education reform proposal? Will tax relief finally come to commercial and industrial property owners? In the first part of the show, we'll talk with the new House Majority Leader, Linda Ubmeyer. She's a Republican from Garner. Then in the second half, we'll talk with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall, a Democrat from Council Bluffs. Join our conversation after the news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. The gavel has struck. The 2013 legislative session has officially started here at the State House in Des Moines. My first guest is the newly appointed House Majority Leader, Linda Ubmeyer. She's a Republican from Clear Lake in north central Iowa. Representative, thanks for being here.
It is my pleasure.
So we'll get started. So what is the top priority for House Republicans this session?
I think the top priorities has been for the last couple of years is making sure Iowa is an even better place for people to live and work and grow their business. That translates, I think, to fixing our property tax issue, making sure we get that resolved, looking at ways we can get more money back in the taxpayer's pocket. We have a overpayment in our revenues, clearly, and we're going to look for ways to give that back to Iowans. It includes education and a skilled workforce. It's all the ways that we can create a better Iowa.
Now, you're talking a lot about economic issues. Is this the year to get any top priority social issues through? For instance, I know that Senator Kent Sorensen of Milo says he's crafting a bill to reinstate the death penalty. Could that go anywhere?
I've not heard anything about that in the House. I don't know what will be happening in the Senate.
So what are some of the you talked about some of these economic issues, education. If you had to kind of make a list, what would the top three be?
Well, I think it would be property taxes, education reform or revitalization, and then probably something along with budgets and income tax, perhaps.
So how can you get a tax reform package that reaches some kind of middle ground? I mean, it feels like every session we're kind of rehashing some of the same issues. The election's over. We're still divided in the House and the Senate. How can you reach some kind of bipartisan conclusion here?
Well, we've made it very clear the principles that we kind of frame everything around, the not spending more than we take in, which is pretty common sense. Nobody can do that with their business or at home. So we want to adhere to that. Not funding ongoing expenses with one-time revenues, and not stepping back from our obligations and not funding them so that we can spend money on something else that we might like to fund, only to come back and have to deal with those as a supplemental. So I think those principles, which I think most Iowans agree that those are pretty common sense principles, that's really our only thing that that has to be the threshold. Beyond that, we're happy to look at all kinds of different forms that a property tax relief might take. As I said earlier today, I think it's important for us to remember that we don't have a great history of funding property tax credits. So when people talk about property tax reform in the form of property tax credits, that gives me some pause, and I think we'll have to talk through that because we haven't got a good history on funding those, and I'm not very confident that a couple years down the road we'll start backing away from that commitment. And that doesn't make the reform predictable or sustainable, and those are things that are important for Iowa families and Iowa businesses when they look at whether or not they can expand, whether they can hire one more person, whether you can put a new addition on your home. Those things require that we have some predictability and sustainability in our tax policy.
So how do you make sure that you don't shortchange local governments that rely on property tax revenue?
The governor has proposed that we backfill that money. Okay, we're happy to look at that. And I think over time, as has happened in the past, the property grows in value and increases. And so the communities are once again made whole just by virtue of the fact that those valuations increase. So I think we have a lot of opportunity to look at how we can do that. Absolutely, it's not our goal to make things really difficult for cities or counties. But at the same time, Iowa taxpayers don't believe that it's only state government that is growing too quickly. They believe all government is growing too quickly. So I think it's important for everybody to take a look at how they do business.
And you're listening to River on Iowa Public Radio News. Join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or reach out to us on Facebook. What are the issues that are most important to you? What would you like to ask Representative Upmeyer? Going back to property taxes, how far is your party willing to get something done?
You know, I, as I said, around those principles, I think everything is on the table. And making sure that that it is predictable and sustainable, we will look at whatever kinds of proposals are out there. The Ways and Means Committee has not even met for the first time this year, so it's hard to know exactly what kinds of ideas people will come with. But remember that even though we have the same Republican majority in the House, Senate Democrat majority, we have 38 new members. I think that's the right number between the House and the Senate. That means there's 38 people with new ideas coming in. Who knows? Someone out there may have a whole new idea to put on the table, and we'll be able to move forward from that. So I think this is an exciting time, and we should view it as a time of great opportunity.
Are there any representatives that you're particularly excited about that you've added to the group?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I haven't met them all yet, so I would hesitate to name anyone individually. But it's a really good group of legislators, I believe, and time will tell. But they're so eager to be engaged, and they're so committed to their districts and to the state of Iowa. So I'm just excited to get to know them all better and work with them.
And there's this, the state has built up a nice budget surplus. Have there been any discussions within your caucus about what to do with those taxpayer dollars? Could a tax cut be in the works?
Well, I don't know anything about a surplus, but I do know we have an overpayment of taxes in the state of Iowa. So we do have additional revenue that we do need to give back to the taxpayers of Iowa. I talked about that earlier this morning, and absolutely we will be looking for ways to make that happen.
And on the topic of education, Governor Branstad talks a lot about education. We kind of mentioned it early on when we were first starting to talk. In the governor's morning press conference, he unrolled a proposal to reform education. He said it scales up over 5 years and has a price tag of $187 million at full implementation. Do you see this getting anywhere? I mean, do you see really solid conversations happening about education reform?
Absolutely. I think education reform is a priority, and the governor certainly believes that. We've worked on it last year. We did some of the things that the governor had hoped we could get done. We're absolutely going to look at it again this year and work through that. The Education Committee, it has a lot of new members on this year. And again, I think they'll bring some additional ideas to the table. I haven't had an opportunity to completely study all of the things that are included in the governor's proposal. I'm sure there are some things that were there last year. There are some new things. But I do know this. The Education Committee has been meeting with some of the folks from the Department of Education. They are ready to get to work. And I do expect that at the end of this session, we're going to have done some things that focus on student success, increase the opportunities for students. Hopefully we haven't created any added burdens onto teachers, and yet that we do have a method of measuring outcomes and make sure that is measurable and that there's accountability built in as well. So I think we do have a great opportunity for that.
In the governor's rollout this morning, he talked about starting pay for teachers going from 28 to 35. How do you feel about teacher pay? I mean, is that something that should be revisited and talked about?
Well, I think the governor's attention to starting pay is timely. I think it's been many years since that's been increased in the code, and that is included in the code of Iowa, what the starting salary is. Certainly many schools start higher, but there is a base in the code. It may be time for us to revisit that. But at the end of the day, I think if that is one of the places where we need to look if we want to be competitive. But the committee will do its work, and they'll decide if that's one of the things that we can include in that package.
What are you hearing from your constituents up in north central Iowa? What are some of the biggest education issues? Have you talked to teachers? What are you hearing about what they're seeing in the classroom?
As a matter of fact, I did just have a meeting. It happened to be with school boards a few nights ago. And one of the things that they brought forward was that they would like to see opportunities for more innovation in programmatic kinds of things. So I'm really excited to hear that. I think there is a good opportunity, and it's needed. I live in a very rural part of the state, so being innovative in the way we provide programming to students becomes more and more important, and who we can partner with and how we can do that. And I love the idea that that school boards and teachers want to think outside the box and bring some ideas for some new things they might do. And that's the kind of thing that I think that we're really looking for, ways that we can make that possible in schools and not just take directive for a one-size-fits-all from a Department of Education. So I hope that's one of the things that the committee looks at.
So when you talk about programmatic things, curriculum changes, or elaborate a little bit on them?
You know, in my understanding, what they're looking at, not only changes in the perhaps not as much in the curriculum as the way the curriculum is taught. So instead of standing in front of a classroom, looking at the ways other ways a teacher might teach, looking at how other students might participate from perhaps around the district, perhaps other districts, and as they share and do more of that kind of thing. But I think that you know, teachers are excited about the possibilities of being able to do some new things and some different things, and I think that's good for the students of Iowa.
Being in a more rural part of the state, do you have a difficult time recruiting teachers? Is teacher recruitment an issue for that part of the state?
I have no data in front of me to support this, but let me say my sense is that in some subjects it is difficult. Typically, it is the same subjects that it's perhaps harder to find teachers anywhere in the state, and that's in some of the math and science areas, some of the IT areas. And I think there's a way we could utilize some of the talent we have in our communities to do that, at least in some targeted ways, by bringing in some of those experts that work in the private sector in our communities. So I think that's another area that we can look at. Who is a teacher? I think many people could be teachers in some limited ways.
And we're talking about education because the governor was bringing it up this morning. So he was trying to get his kind of thoughts out there and rolling. It's wide open. It's the beginning of the legislative session. I'm talking with House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer from Clear Lake. What are the issues that are important to you? Call us at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm on there too, Clayton Masters, or reach out to us on Facebook. And since we're kind of wide open, one of the things that has been talked a lot lately is Secretary of State Matt Schultz has been pushing hard on the issue of what he calls voter integrity. Now, a judge prevented him from taking action after checking a list of registered voters against a federal database before the election, and then some lawmakers have argued any changes to the way voter rolls are handled needs to be approved by the legislature. Will House Republicans approve a bill to give the secretary more discretion on the issue?
You know, I'd have to take a look at any kind of bill before I could speak on that. But I think everybody in the state agrees that we want people that are legal to vote in Iowa to absolutely be able to vote. And we don't want to limit that, make it harder for those people to vote. But in fact, people should be legal, and we'll wait and see what the Secretary of State recommends. I don't know what that will look like for sure.
Have you heard much about voter ID issues? Have you heard about anyone breaking the law? Is that a big concern for you?
Well, I think there actually have been some I think there have actually been some not prosecutions, but I think there have been some people that have been charged with voter fraud. So, I mean, I don't know what the outcome of that will be, but...
So how do you protect integrity but also not restrict access? I mean, that seems to be one of the common conversations that happens.
Well, I think that is a challenge. And we've talked about voter ID in the past and having a photo ID, which would be, you know, state supplied. So it wouldn't be a big cost to anyone. If they didn't have a driver's license, they could pick one up. I don't know if that's something that the Secretary of State's interested in doing, revisiting. I just don't know.
Have you talked at all with the Secretary of State?
You know, I have not. I know he's been a busy guy, and so have I. So we've kind of been operating in different branches of government. And if he has a bill before us, I'm sure the committee will give it due consideration. And depending on what's in it, it may move forward, it may not.
When we first started talking, you brought up some of the important issues to you, one of which was workforce development, you know, a strong workforce. Mm-hmm. How do you ramp up Iowa's workforce? What do you actually do, and what can you do as a lawmaker?
Well, I think we've got a history of working on that, and I think we can strengthen it. Our community colleges are one of our best resources for doing that. Community colleges have the ability to be very nimble. They go out and work with the communities regularly to find out what kind of workforce is needed in that particular community, and they can tailor programs and training designed to make sure that an employer has a ready workforce. So I think we just continue to do that in my conversations with community colleges. While they believe they'll need additional resources to do the maximum possible they could in that arena, they believe that the programs that they have at this time are adequate to do all that. So we just need to make sure that we keep promoting those programs, keep the folks at the community colleges engaged with economic development, working with the Department of Economic Development, we need to focus on how we translate that back into the K-12 system. So the students graduating from high school are prepared to go to work as well. Or if it's a certificate program or a 6 or 9 month program, that we have that available at the community colleges. And that that relationship happens through that dialogue that they have and do so well in the communities. There are many other career kinds of opportunities that exist that do require a longer education than that. And our Regents universities and our private colleges have stepped up and are working very hard to make sure that they have students to do that. We're working with the Iowa State University to focus on some of the engineering, some of the ag engineering. This is a very agricultural state, and making sure that we're ready to do the research and development at the universities and working with the private sector to get that done, to have more and more of those jobs in Iowa and more development in Iowa. So I think across the entire spectrum of education, we're eager to hear what kind of proposals come forward.
Could you see some of this over-collection of taxes support additional funding for community colleges or workforce programs? I mean, is that money well spent if we did things that way?
You know, that's possible, but I recall that we'd need it to be one-time money because there's no assurance that we'll have ongoing overpayments. So as we decide what to do with these resources, this overpayment, there may be a possibility that that we can fill some one-time needs, you know, fix some roofs or do some things that we need to do. But we're not going to use it for ongoing expenses. That would be irresponsible.
Changing topics a little bit, certainly because of the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut, gun control and gun violence has been a topic of conversation a lot lately. Last year, there was legislation to expand gun rights that ultimately didn't get anywhere. Is that kind of action not doable because of all this attention?
You know, I'm not sure. I think the members of my caucus continue to support Second Amendment rights. While we have these tragedies and we absolutely cannot overlook them, I think we can't look at guns as the sole problem here. We have to focus on our mental health issues in this state. We have to focus on making sure that we provide those services and we have a good structure for that. I think we also need to look at parental responsibilities, where it has to do with television violence, movie violence, violent games that are played on the internet. All those things play a role, and I think it would be wrong to only look at one solution to such a tragic problem.
Well, you also have to kind of position yourself to guard against any effort to tighten gun control in Iowa?
Well, it entirely depends, I think, on what we're talking about. Things that would infringe on Second Amendment rights, I think, would give us pause. But we need to focus on what the real issue is, and that has much to do with the fact that we're not providing as much mental health service as we can in the state and to the right people and paying attention. And all of us need to be part of the solution to remove the stigma surrounding mental illness. It is an illness, and we need to treat it as such. And we need to all be partners in making sure that gets done.
So what do we do about it? I mean, revamping the mental health system, or how can we increase better mental health?
Well, I think it has to do with communication, treatment, access, absolutely. Mental health is not, especially mental health for children, is not easy to access. And we have very few child psychiatrists in this state. We need to recruit more. We need to train more people to do that work. So I think it is something that we need to, that we actually can contribute to improving that circumstance in our state.
And does that come from the one-time overspending, or not overspending, excuse me, the over-collection of taxes? I mean, are we just working with that pot, or will there be new streams of revenue to do some of the work that you're talking about?
You know, last year we started on mental health reform in the state of Iowa, and part of the issue there was to make sure that we had a more uniform access across the state to mental health services, because obviously in urban areas, your resources, your access is better than it is in some of the rural areas. So we want to make sure that work continues forward. There is work yet to be done on that project. And we'll be doing that, I suspect, not only this year, but in the next couple of years. That's a system that is very complex, and as we move forward and make some changes, I predict we'll need to make additional changes as well.
So this uniform access, I mean, is there a concern that would be too much of a one-size-fits-all?
Well, I think having access is different than saying there's only one treatment, so, or there's only one solution to the problem. But we do need to make sure that all Iowans have access to the information and the treatment that might be necessary for any illness.
And what kind of, I mean, is there adequate treatment here in Iowa? I mean, does that need to be re-looked at? Do studies need to be looked at how the treatment is being done?
I think that much of that data, and I didn't serve on that committee, but much of that data was gathered last year, and I think we did find pockets of places where we needed to improve that, and that's part of the focus of the mental health reform.
And so kind of as we're winding down our conversation, I mean, are there other elements, other issues that are really key for you this session?
You know, I think I would not want to predict what bills my caucus members and the members of the legislature will file this year. Oftentimes those are issues that Iowans at the very local level have asked their legislators to bring forward, and we're open to any bill, looking at any issue that is good for Iowans.
We've been talking with the newly appointed House Majority Leader, Linda Uppmeyer. She's a Republican from Clear Lake. Representative, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Coming up in the second part of the show, Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl will talk with the Democrat from Council Bluffs about what he sees as the most important issues in the Senate this year. If you want to join our conversation, call us 866-780-9100. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. It's the first day of the 2013 legislative session. Sitting across the table from me here in the Law Library at the State House is Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl, the Democrat from Council Bluffs, fought hard to retain his seat in the November election, and he's back as Majority Leader. Senator, thanks for coming by and talking with us today.
Sure. Happy to be here.
As we started the first part of the show with Republican House Majority Leader Linda Utmeyer, I want to do the same thing. I want to ask you what some of your key issues are that your party sees as priorities to move forward this year. Given your remarks this morning, it sounds like a more skilled workforce might top that list.
Well, certainly, you know, there are a host of issues that will face this General Assembly: mental health, tax relief, healthcare, education reform, those kinds of efforts. One of the things Senate Democrats heard loud and clear on the campaign trail from the business world is there's a skill shortage in the state of Iowa. We need to help Iowans get the skills to help businesses be successful in this state. So we're very, very interested in expanding some of the things we do. I used an example. We traveled post-election. We traveled around the state and talked with a lot of business leaders and community colleges and some folks in K through 12 education. And the day I was in Sioux City at the community college there, met a man that had a degree in interior design, was from the East Coast, couldn't find a job there, moved to Iowa, had been working for a while at a minimum wage job in Iowa, realized that wouldn't work very well for his family in the end, and tried to figure out what he could do to get a skill to put food on the table for his family. And he went to a class through something we call Kibbe Grants. Jack Kibbe, the former president of the Iowa Senate, was a major advocate for community colleges in the state. And there's a lot of non-degree programs at community colleges where you don't get an associate degree after 2 years, where you get some basic training in some key area. And in this particular case, this guy decided he'd be a truck driver. And so he took a course, a one-month course in commercial drivers and passed the test, got his commercial driver's license. And the day I was there, he had gotten a phone call that morning. And there's something really neat about, you know, kind of the seeing on a human level a guy that's just gotten a ticket to a significantly better life because they called and said he was going to be he's going to be making two and a half, three times what he was making at minimum wage, and now had an opportunity to put food on the table for his family. And there's some basic dignity in that is really kind of moving.
So does that mean maybe put more funding towards community colleges?
Certainly, community colleges have been that grant program was just created last year for non-degree for tuition assistance for non-degree programs. But it's whether it's as simple as a commercial driver's license, or as complex as an employer like Rockwell Collins needing world-class electrical engineers. It's that whole gamut of training, and it's one of the more basic functions that state governments have always been engaged in. And 100 years ago, a high school diploma was plenty. Today, there's almost no jobs out there that have very much future that don't involve more than just a high school diploma. So we're certainly interested in working with the business community, working with community colleges, with workforce development. We're certainly interested in putting together a set of training things that will help Iowa close this skills gap that exists in the state of Iowa. And the governor has talked about trying to move family incomes up 25%. Well, you don't do that on minimum wage jobs. You've got to do that by upskilling Iowa workers in this state. So that's going to be a major focus for the Senate Democrats. And I'd also say I think we're incredibly well positioned. We have quite a bit of money in the state treasury. So our economy's doing better than many states. Unemployment's coming down in Iowa. There's still too many people out of work in the state, but we're better off than many states. And with that surplus, with those significant dollars sitting in the state treasury, we have the opportunity, in one sense, to maybe capture a little more than our fair share of the economic growth that I think is coming in this country. So I think that would be great for Iowa to engage in that and be able for us as a state to look any employer, large or small, look any employer in the state of Iowa, look them in the eye and say, Iowa has the finest training programs in the country. They're integrated, whether you're somebody that doesn't have a high school diploma and so you need adult basic education, all the way to whether you're that world-class electrical engineer, that we can look any business in the state and say, we have, in the state or out of the state, say we have the premier systems for making sure you get the trained workers you need.
Representative Utmeyer, in the first part of the show today, says said that there's no ongoing spending from the budget surplus. What do you say to that? Is there?
Well, we're certainly we certainly agree that we can afford some tax cuts this session. We certainly agree that that we can't spend every nickel of the dollars that are in our ending balance. That we've got to be prudent about that. But it's getting difficult as our surplus in Iowa has grown. From less than enough to fill our reserve funds to more than twice as much as we need to fill our reserve fund, it's grown increasingly difficult to maintain that there isn't a surplus and that we can't afford some strategic investments. Like I say, we have to be careful, prudent about how we spend those. So we ought to spend them strategically in ways that grow our economy.
The presidential election a lot of time sets the tone for what we talk about during an election, and this year it was really hard on the economic side, not so much the social side. But for the past two sessions, you've refused to allow a debate on a measure that would allow a vote on the issue of same-sex marriage. Will you continue that policy?
I've jokingly said to people, I've now changed my mind. No, of course I'll maintain that. We are not going to put discrimination in the state constitution. That's a mistake for Iowa. And I think attitudes are changing and changing more quickly than most people realize. So for my children's generation, this is literally a non-issue. And so, we're not going to put discrimination in the state constitution. And I actually think if you look around the country in this last election, you saw that that attitudes have changed. People have moved. States are now starting to approve gay marriage at the polls. We kind of knew 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago when this decision was made, we kind of knew it'd be controversial for a while, but that it would probably over time move fairly quickly. No, we're not going to have a debate on amending Iowa's constitution to put discrimination in it.
President Obama, switching topics here a bit, President Obama has put Vice President Biden in charge of a federal effort to look at the ways to curb gun violence. Those recommendations are set to be released this week. What will you be looking at in those recommendations? Some in your party have said they'd like to see strong gun laws in Iowa in the wake of the Sandy Hook elementary school shootings. What is your stance on gun control legislation at the state level?
Well, one of the challenges in Iowa is I come from a border community. I come from Council Bluffs, Iowa. If we enact a set of laws, but those same laws aren't enacted in Nebraska, it doesn't really accomplish much. So if you can drive across the river, or if people on the Nebraska side can drive to our side of the those issues really beg for a national solution, not for a state solution. What begs for a state solution in the state of Iowa is a better delivery system for mental health treatment in the state. And we have a system now that's predicated on 99 different counties putting together an effort to deliver mental health services to people in the state of Iowa. I don't think that has been terribly effective. I think they've done reasonably well, but every county in the state of Iowa doesn't even have a psychiatrist in every county in the state of Iowa. So we've got to do a better job of delivering mental health services in the state. We started down that road last year. We put about $40 million of state dollars into this transition effort to change our delivery system from a 99-county system to a regional delivery system for mental health services. But clearly, we as a society all across the country, not just Iowa, have to do a better job of delivering mental health services, at helping keep people from falling through the cracks. We won't always be able to stop every bad thing from happening, but I think we have some real responsibility to a better job of delivering mental health services in the state.
What would a better job look like? What are the conversations that you can start having in the session now?
So the challenge now is, last year we kind of started down this road of a more regional delivery system for mental health services in the state of Iowa, working together with our partners in the county, working with providers out there that actually provide these services. We've got to look for ways to deal with a host of these issues, and it's complicated, hard, nitty-gritty kind of stuff where people have to sit down at a table and say, what are the challenges? We've got to work with law enforcement. So I don't know that I have all the answers to that, but we've started down that road and we've got to continue down that road. And it's going to take both some changes to our laws, but it's also going to take some commitment of dollars to make sure that we're delivering good mental health services across the state of Iowa. And like I say, the old 99 county system, some counties had robust services for mentally ill people, and some counties had pretty thin services for mentally ill people. And we also had this complicated issue in a 99 county delivery system, this complicated issue of you're not a resident of my county. You're a resident of that county next door. Go get them to pay for your mental health services. That created some challenges in our delivery system as well. And I think largely it worked okay. But as I said, I don't think it was the best delivery system. And there were some internal squabbles over which county was going to pay and those kinds of things. I think we need to work through those so that we get a better delivery system.
So will that be a debate that you start having pretty soon here in the coming weeks? Or
We actually have some challenges because some counties, under some of what we did last year, even though we put $40 million in new state dollars in this system, some counties have waiting lists and are nervous about how the end of this year works out. So we're going to have to work pretty diligently and pretty early on the revamping of the mental health delivery system.
Moving on to another topic, House Republicans approved voter ID legislation last session. Will the Senate debate any effort to what Republicans say is protecting the integrity of elections?
We think Iowa's elections have pretty solid integrity now. There aren't many people that have identified significant problems with that. Anything we can do to make sure that everybody that votes is voting legally and to guarantee that everybody that is qualified and wants to vote gets that opportunity. And some of those efforts in the past have been the kinds of efforts that really, maybe they'll find one in 1.2 million people that have voted inappropriately but the process to stop that stops thousands from being able to vote. We'll certainly look at those measures that both increase the integrity of the system but also increase the participation and are not a threat to that participation.
And you're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. We're talking with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl. Again, that number, if you want to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. We'll go to a caller right now, Vanessa in Des Moines. Hello, Vanessa. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about legislators, all legislators going into a session. It's very important that our resources are utilized appropriately, in funding things like a fully funded Iowa Workforce Development or Department of Natural Resources, or investing in education, making sure there's access to higher education for all. Instead of focusing on this issue, it's actually non-existent issue of a lack of voter process integrity. I think that's really not a issue that is really a problem in Iowa, whereas investing in education, investing in workforce development, investing in our Department of Natural Resources really should be priorities for legislators. Thank you.
Thanks, Vanessa. And certainly the senator would probably be in agreement with the comments about voter ID, but Vanessa brings up education. The governor this morning was unveiling an education proposal. Have you had any time to look at what the governor has talked about?
I haven't had a lot of time. Thanks, Vanessa, for those comments. And I do agree with you. We ought to focus state resources on things that are really going to make a difference. And now shifting back to your point about education, I'd say one of our concerns is the governor's. I think I heard Jason Glass make reference to taking some money that we currently spend on literacy, on early elementary literacy, taking some of that money and using it for another provision on literacy, which I'd say we have some significant reservations about. Last year, we worked with the governor on this business of third grade retention. If kids can't read by the end of third grade, of having them stay back a year, and we kind of created a hybrid with that, where we would say to a family, you have a choice. This kid can either stay back for a year, and some kids are not ready to go on. But if you have some good reason to believe that, we think we ought to give parents the choice: keep the kid back for a year, or put the kid in an intensive summer school program to get back to grade level. And so, so doing that by scooping some other money that's designed to improve early elementary literacy, we think that's a mistake. I mean, it's just a kind of a bait and switch game. I kind of sometimes feel like Lucy and the football with Charlie Brown. So
we're going to go to another caller, David in Alamakee County. David, you're on River to River.
Yes, thank you. I want to applaud the senator for bringing up the issue on mental health. I hope that the state is going to spend the money it takes to correct this. But my main point is, seconding of the previous caller, we were not taking seriously enough the sustainability of the resources we have here, environmental. And that's obvious in many ways. And the EPA may have to intervene on the state because the DNR is not doing its job, probably because it doesn't have the funding. What's more important than our land, air, and water? And let me ask you, when are we going to fund the Land and Legacy Amendment that was passed years ago? Thank you.
Thanks, David. And so more of a push for environmental concerns.
Well, I'd also say, I mean, clearly there are issues relative to the federal government and the EPA and what we need to do about nutrients going into the water streams in Iowa and in up down in the Gulf of Mexico. And there are real issues there. But from my perspective, the even greater issue isn't what's going on downstream. It's what's happening right now on Iowa land. I heard a very disturbing report on the radio last week that the time it's taking for an inch of silt in our lakes is down to 4 years to add an inch to the bottom of a lake, whereas 25 years ago it was 20 years, or 20, I think the number was 22 years to add an inch of silt. We are losing what makes Iowa unique. We have 10% of the world's best farmland, and if we lose that topsoil, the future for the state is not particularly bright. So I think we need a much more aggressive effort in that, and our folks are certainly looking at that. The land and air legacy, there are people looking at a mechanism to deal with that. That was predicated on the next time there's a sales tax increase, the first 3/8 of a cent would go into this land and legacy fund. There has not been been an attitude or a need for a tax increase. People could argue about whether or not there was a need, but there hasn't been an interest in pursuing a tax increase of that magnitude. There are people talking about some mechanisms to, in essence, get to the same place. So I am interested in getting to a place. Those issues that have been put to the ballot in Iowa have been getting broad support. The issue itself on that first constitutional amendment on the air and water legacy passed very solidly in the state of Iowa. And then we've had individual counties that have done some initiatives on this front, and they also have gotten broad support. And as the caller probably knows, those county efforts require a 60% approval rating. So they've gotten broad and deep support with the voters. So I'm very interested in looking for a path to go down. And there are people talking about several different paths to get that air and water and land legacy funded.
We're running short on time, but I do
I
wanna,
know I'm giving way I, too no, long an great. Answer. So.
One thing that I do feel that we need to bring up is just that now that the president's Affordable Care Act is here to stay, how does that impact Iowa's healthcare system and plans to expand Medicaid?
Well, I'd say both the plans to expand Medicaid. It sounds like the governor has indicated he thinks under existing law he can create the exchange. He can do that as a partnership with the federal government. So that's one piece of it. The Medicaid expansion. I've been hearing from hospital administrators across the state and other healthcare providers that really makes sense for the state of Iowa. So we've been listening to people that run the hospital, but kind of folks that are on the ground in the state of Iowa here delivering those healthcare services. And the amount of charity care or uncompensated care, whatever you want to call it, that exists in our hospitals across the state. So if you or I keel over in this room and clutch our chest and get taken to the nearest hospital, and if we don't have health insurance coverage, that doesn't mean they go, oh, we're going to turn you away. It means they treat you, and it means the cost of that care is shifted to all of the rest of us that do have insurance. So there's a hidden tax on people's insurance policies, and working together with the providers, we think expansion of Medicaid makes significant sense for the state of Iowa. So we're hoping people will take a look at those things and go down that road.
We've been talking with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl. He's a Democrat from Council Bluffs. Senator, thanks for joining us today in the law library here in the state capitol on this opening day of the session.
Hey, happy to do it. I enjoyed being here.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet to us too, IPR Talk, or at Clayton Masters. We always welcome your comments and questions about the program. Contact us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.